Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf, Hayyemi Meseches, Nida Daf Nun Aleph. We begin on Nun Amid Beis, six lines from the bottom. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. This goes back to yesterday's discussion regarding the Nivlas Oif Tohar, a dead kosher bird, where the Torah teaches that if one eats that bird, that unkosher bird, because an avela is usher to eat, but if one eats it, he will receive a very high level tumah on account of that experience. A tumah chamura. Him and the begotten that he's wearing become tummy. Now, in order to generate that tumah, there's no need for any preparatory elements, which are typically required for something to become tummy. Like, in contrast to food, in order for food to become tummy, it needs hechsher l'kabel tumah, to get wet by one of the seven primary liquids. It also needs to come into contact with a source of tumah, like a dead lizard, like a sheretz. Otherwise, there's no tumah on food, naturally, but here. There's a natural, sort of self-generating tumah on this, in this dead kosher bird, to transmit tumah chamura to one who eats it. So for that, we don't need any heksher. We don't even need machshava. We don't have to designate it as eating material. It's metami regardless. The question was regarding tumah kala. You see, this bird is also food material. And as such, it should have a basic tumah as well, such as food, which is tummy, which will have a low-level tumah, which will metami other liquids, etc. Not metami people, but what about that basic tumah? That tumah kala. So in this specific case, it doesn't need any hechsher, any preparation, in terms of getting wet, in terms of receiving tumah from elsewhere, because it's part of this tumah chamura package. And since this bird will generate tumah chamura, automatically generates tumah kala as well. And it's regarded like tummy food, with its, you know, ramifications. The sticking point was machshav. Chacham require machshav, which means you have to designate it as food material. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri disagreed, based on Al Kavachomer, there's no need to have machshav. It automatically has both levels of tumah. Look, if it even has the more severe tumah without designation, certainly the lighter tumah. Now, it turns out that they were discussing a very specific case where that bird took a crash landing into the wine and it became a little bit unsuitable for consumption. But initially, we thought it was relating to all. It was a broad machlokes to all. Nivlas oiftar, whether or not, needs machshava to give it that basic tumah. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri presented his view with a machlokes, with a kal vachomer, which the chachamim negated, as we're going to see in the upcoming discussion. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, kal vachomer, let me prove that there's no need for machshava to give it to makala. Look, im metama to machamur shle machshava. If this bird possesses the upgraded tumah without prior designation, wouldn't you think it has the basic tumah without the need to designate it as food? Amr Lo Yacham responded, you can't compare one type of tumah to the other. Lo Yiv Amris b'tumah chamura. It's true that by the more severe tumah, there's no need for machshava shekein eino yiredes lekach, as opposed to tumah kala, which is different. Now, what do they mean? What's this phrase? Mai eino yiredes lekach. Amr Rabbi Amri Lei. They meant as follows. Lo im amras betuma. We turn to the next number. Betuma chamura. Shekein eina oisa kayitze bo. Look, it's very different. Tuma kala from tuma chamura. Tuma chamura, when a person eats it and he becomes tummy, he can't turn around and transmit that tuma to somebody else. It stops right there. It's a limited, has a limited life, lifespan. Tuma betuma kala sho oisa kayitze bo, as opposed to tuma kala, the basic tumah applied to food, that can turn around and be transmitted to the next food. So it's very different. Amalei Abayis says, well, if anything, that's all the more reason to go with Rabbi Yochanan Nuri's approach. Kol Dechenu. If anything, it's more logical now. Uma tumah chamura dekila. If tumah chamura has a weakness, so to speak, that it can't carry over to the next, then it can't duplicate likewise. Still, so despite that sort of inability, that efficiency, mitamash lev machshava, it generates tumah without prior designation, tumah kala, the chamira, the oisah, it's a ba, the lighter tumah, which in a sense is, it's lighter, it's ironic, it's a lighter, but it's more powerful, it can be transmitted further. So because of its strength, wouldn't you think that it's easier to activate it? It doesn't need machshav. So this couldn't have been their discussion. Elam Rav Sheshes, rather, says Rav Sheshes, I'll tell you what he had in mind. He meant to say like this. What they responded was like this. Loi im amras betumah chamur. You can't compare to the higher level tumah. Shekein eina tzricha hechsher. Because to generate tumah chamur, there's no need for preparation. Like we explained before, the bird need not get wet. It doesn't have to go through the phases of hechsher. It doesn't have to receive tumah from hasheretz. But automatically is tamei regardless. So perhaps because of its strength, it also does not require machshava. Toima b'tumakala, as opposed to tumakala, which in general only happens through the preparatory stages. Shetzricha hechsher, which needs hechsher, in order for a banana to become tamei, has to get wet, has to touch a sheretz. So since it's weaker, perhaps it needs more to get it activated. Ask the Gemara, behold it. That's true in general. Food needs hechsher to become tummy, but in our case, the bird is automatically going to have tumah kala without hechsher. It's sort of a package deal. Because of its tumah chamura ability, it also has tumah kala without any preparatory phases. What are you referring to hechsher here? Umitzricha hechsher? Is hechsher a requirement? Vatznan shloisha asar devarim nemer b'nimas avtar. There are 13 elements relating to this bird. Tzricha machshava, although it needs machshava, but ve'ena matame el besabli, it's only matame as you swallow it, but ve'ena tzricha hechsher, need not go through those preparatory phases. You're right, says the Gemara, need the hechsher sheres le'boya, although it doesn't need to come into contact with another source of tumah to become tumah, it has its own tumah generated, it doesn't have to touch a sheres, but it has another element of preparation which is needed, it has to get wet before becoming tumah, hechsher mayim boya. Ask the Gemara, why? They go hand in hand, and the pasuk eliminates the need for hechsher in this case. All types of hechsher, all elements are not needed. Not the getting wet, not the touching the sheretz. Maishna, what's the difference? Hechsher sheretz leibay, it doesn't have to come into contact with the sheretz to become tamei ketani rishmoel, as we learned, coming up soon. That material which will have the ability to be a self-generated of strong tumah chamura is already a shu'in. It doesn't need any preparation, even for the lighter tumah. Likewise, it need not get wet either. All elements of a hechsher are suspended in this case. Hechsher mayim namalei tumah ketani rishmoel, tani rishmoel. So this is the pasuk discussing hechsher. It discusses seeds, it discusses plants, alkal zera, zeirosh, zereya. We compare everything to this material. Maz roim shein soifel l'tamah tumah chamura, just as seeds and plants are not going to generate tumah chamura, why would they? And that is exactly why they require a proper hechsher process, tzrichen hechsher, avko, likewise, any other material. Only something which matches, she'en, soifon, tamen tumah chamura, which won't have tumah chamura, tzrichen hechsher, as opposed to our bird over here, yotzen nivel soif tar, she soifa, which ultimately will be metame, that severe tumah when he swallows it, tamen tumah chamura, and therefore, it doesn't need any outside help, she'en, tzrich hechsher. So why would they refer to hechsher as a precondition for tumah kala if in this specific case it's not needed? Elama Rava Vitimar Papa, yeah, they were talking concepts in general. To enable tumah kala, hechsher is required. So that puts it behind tumah chamura, which never needs hechsher. So you're right, in this specific circumstance, it's an exception. Even for tumah kala, we don't need hechsher, but in concept, if we're going to pit one against the other, compare tumah kala, which typically needs hechsher, versus tumah chamura, which doesn't need, that sets them apart. And again, it's the Kal V'Chomer. Shum tumah chamura ba'olam, shum tumah kala ba'olam, the general concept of tumah chamura, which never needs hechsher, as opposed to tumah kala, which generally does need hechsher. So let's just recap. Rabbi Chamuri sought to prove that even for tumah kala, we don't need machshava, based on the fact that it's not needed for tumah chamura. Chacham respond, tumah chamura has an advantage over tumah kala. It never needs hechsher as opposed to tumah kala, which typically needs hechsher. So perhaps in this case, it has additional conditions as well, i.e. machshav. Amar. Now this links back to the midpoint of yesterday's daf, where Rabbi Yechon was quoted as saying, look, when you have materials which can be consumed either by animals, in which case they're not eligible to be considered food, but sometimes consumed by humans, in which case that gives them eligibility to be considered, give them food status regarding Meiser obligations regarding becoming tummy to Mas Oichlin. If it's still on the ground growing, you can't redesignate it at this early stage. You have to wait until it's picked off the ground. When it becomes a candidate for tumma, it becomes food material off the ground, which can become tummy. Now you can redesignate it as you wish. But while it's still mechuber, you can't. Amar Rava, there's one exception. Moed Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi Yechon would agree, le'inyan maser, regarding triggering the chiyuv maser on this material, on this dual-use material. In this case, Mefarshim explains, since maser conceptually can even get activated while it's still growing in the ground, you can label something as truma while it's still in the ground, so it already has an opening. It relates to maser even while it's in the ground. The machshavas chibur shma machshavas, in this case, if you redesignate it, classified as human food while still in the ground, it will impact the material with respect to activating chiv of master. Amar Rava, how do I know this huge chiddush? Minah minila. This name have a mishnah. Hasiya ve'ezav ha'karonis, all these dual use material. Shabachatz are growing in the yard. Imhoyu nishmar. And Chayav and Brisa says, look, a precondition for chiv of master is nishmarin. Now, what does nishmarin mean? The Gemara figured it means to say that he's looking after it for his own personal use. He's designating them as food. Hey, Chedami, now what exactly happened here? What's the background? Elam Adazarin Adam, Adam. Initially, he was planted them for his personal consumption. Then why even this? Of course, it's chayv in Maser. It's human food. Elalav Adazarin Adchilu Behem. Apparently, initially, it was planted for animal feed, and it requires a redesignation. Uktani, and still the Brisa says, you can do that even while it's still growing. Yimoyu Nishmar and Chayav, and if he was guarding it for his own personal use, it's chayv. Clearly, you can have machshava while still growing. Amar Rav Ashi, no. Hacha b'chotzer she'olam elein askina. Nobody planted them. They were wildly growing in the chotzer. Ustam al adam kaimi. The truth is, it's presumed to be for human consumption. Okay, so what's missing? V'chikam, the price just means to say, make sure that it's owned. Because otherwise, if it's hefker, it's pata from maser. So it's a totally different point. If the yard is guarded, is enclosed, and it's considered personally owned, so the growth is chayav maser imla. But otherwise, if it's hefker, it's exempt from maser. So it's unrelated to our discussion. Maser Rav Ashi. And the Kashan Rav, who made this split today, said, well, regarding the ability to mekabel tumah, that designation has to take place after it's been harvested. But regarding activating the chiyuv maser, that can occur even while it's still growing. So, similarly, you can have material which is subject to chiyuv maser, but not yet subject to becoming tamei tumas oichlin. That's not really consistent with the Mishnah of yesterday that explained that it goes hand in hand. If something is subject to maser, automatically subject to Tumas Oichlin. And here we have a case which is not so. Maser Rav Ashi called Shchayav v'Maseres. Mishnah states something which is Chayav v'Maser, mitame Tumas Oichlin. End quote. V'Misa, according to you, Hoyikahani, we have these examples. The Chayav v'Maser, which were redesignated and labeled as human food while still growing in the ground, that activates Chayav v'Maser, but not Tumah v'Ein, mitame Tumas Oichlin, Marava. 100% right. You see, the Mishnah is referring to concepts. In general, it is so. Where there is Maser, there is Tumas Oichlin. Although not in every single specific circumstance. So that's not a kasha. I'm a Rav HaChikam. The Mishnah means like this. Kol min, any type of food, any species. Shechai b'Maser, which is classified as food regarding Maser, in general, metame Tumas Oichlin. But of course, you'll find me some one-off case. Hachanam Mistar will even prove to you that the Mishnahs present in this fashion. It's about concepts. It's about generalities. But Tony Sefer, look at the Mishnah coming up today. An animal which is subject to the mitzvah of Reishis Hageis, the first shearing given to the Kohen, which is specific to a sheep, is automatically also Chayv Matonis. Requires you to give the portions, you know, the forearm, the stomach to the Kohen. Chayv Matonis, Chayv Reishis Hageis, but it doesn't automatically go the other way. You can have a goat, which is Chayv Matonis, not Reishis Hageis, which is specific to sheep. Now here are two. You can uncover some anomaly case where this formula won't hold true. V'misa, well, if it's exact and precise, how you could treif? I'll give you an example. A treif, an animal with an internal wound. D'chayeves b'reish ha'geis, still chayim reish ha'geis, but not v'enechayeves matonis, no matonis, it's asr b'achila, right? Apparently, it's about concept. In concept, one which is subject to Reish Hageis is also subject to Matonis, even though you'll have that one-off case. Amar Ravina, no! Hamani Rav Shimon hi. That wouldn't be an issue here because the Mishnah goes like Rav Shimon. This Nan, or the Sanya, Rav Shimon poitas a treif from Reish Hageis. A treifa, he says, is part of Reish Hageis as well. So the formula holds true 100%. Amar Rav Simeon bar Ashi. Okay, I'll come and bring you another example where it's about concept and not necessarily about every specific case. Toshma, Hamafker is karma. His fellow let go of his vineyard, made it hefker. The next morning he had a change of heart and he quickly regains ownership. And we know that hefker material is exempt from maaser, is exempt from other gifts to the poor, like payah. Like here was a very short-lived hefker. We have a special pasuk, Rashi brings it, that regarding gifts to the poor, you can't get away with this loophole. You're still chayv to give those gifts, but maser yipata from sins. The fact is, he reacquired it from its hefker status, which exempts it from maser. Toshma, mafker is karmoy. Vishkim, next morning, he wakes up way early in the morning before anybody can get to Vishkim, abayke rubatzer, and he harvested his supposedly hefker vineyard. So it's still chayv, a parrot, of a oilulus, of a shikha, pay all the gifts to the poor, it's chayiv, a potom and a master, there's no master. Because he acquired it from hefker. Now the question is, vanantanan, didn't we have a mishnah yesterday? You cannot have one without the other. Kol shechayiv a peyah, chayiv a master. There's peyah, there's master. Elav shmamino min ketani shmamino. That proves that point. It's all about concepts. In general, when it's chayiv and Peya, which has high degree of requirement, of precondition, certainly it's chayv a maaser. That's in general, although you'll find me a one-off exceptional case, such as the short-lived hefker. That supports Rava's approach to the Mishnayos in general, that we're talking about concepts, in which case the kasha that was asked on him was resolved, and Rava sticks to his position, quotes Rabbi Yechanan, that although regarding redesignating this dual-use material as human consumption material, regarding tumah only can take place after picked, but regarding maser, that can happen even while still in the ground. Non-hasam. Off to a similar topic. We have a Mishnah. Moedim chacham Rabbi Kiva. All the chachamim disagree with Rabbi Kiva regarding a different matter, regarding little patches of grain, of whatever produce. They hold that even though it's scattered around the field, but they're really all part of one crop, it's one field, even though he picked some early, in which case he left those empty patches, which separates it. Doesn't matter, it's all one big thing, and there's only one chi of pay on the entire thing. But they agree. When we're speaking about herbs and spices, which are typically planted in smaller quantity patches, each one has its own designation. Each one is regarded like its own planting area, its own field, so to speak, and you have to do payah from each one. Maidim chacham Rabbi Kiva b'zareya sheves. If one plants sheves, which some translate as dill, or chardol, or mustard, a couple of places throughout the field, in this case, each one is separate, shenoyes in payah, to give a payah, leave off the corner for the poor, mi kol echad ve'echad, from each one separately. Return to his base. V'ha! Okay, seemingly, Shabbos the Machai v'Peah. And Rashi learns, in contrast to typical Gemara language, where v'ha is sort of the opening salvo of a question, here it's not so. We're just making a diuk. We're implying. V'ha sheves t'machai v'peya, once we concluded, sheves dil has pay obligations. So the assumption is that it's also chayiv in master. Chayiv in master. This non, we know that it goes hand in hand. Mishnah said so. Kol shechayiv pay chayiv in master. Next link in the chain. Once that's established, uvin lechayiv in master. Once master applies, tuma applies as well. Metame tuma seichel. As per the Mishnah, this non, there's a girsa that adds this non. We have a Mishnah that ties them together. Kol shechayiv in master. So we have this sort of chain reaction. If it's chayv and peyo, it's chayv and maser. It's chayv and maser, it's chayv. Tama tuma soich. Alma, apparently, kol midi. Any material, the avid latama. You see, sheves isn't typically consumed outright. It's used as a seasoning, as a spice, as a flavor enhancer. Alma kol midi, the avid latama, something which is meant for enhancement of flavor. Tama tuma soich. Is regarded as food regarding tumas oichlin. Why the high sheves? Because this sheves just discussed l'tamamid is meant for flavor, and we see that it has tumas oichlin. But our meaning, how comes the kasha? Other examples of seasonings and herbs, where it's not so simple. Ramini hakoyisht v'achimu v'rashi b'soma v'atia v'achiltes v'apupum v'chalas v'charia. All these nikachan v'kaser maser. They can be purchased using maser sheni money in your shalim, which is meant for food only. So regarding that matter, they're considered like food, but vein metama tuma seichel, they're not considered food regarding tuma. They're sort of in between. They're a pseudo food. They're food enhancers. They can be used to enhance your dish. Hence, they're considered like food regarding buying with maser and money, but they're not inherently food regarding tuma seichel. Rabbi Akiva. Amar le Rabbi Manuri, look, either both in or both out. If they're food regarding master money, why not regarding tuma? If they don't have tuma seichel, so they're not like food for that, then they shouldn't have food status for master sheni money either. If Rabbi Yechon Nuri concludes his discussion that there was a vote taken in the Beis HaMedrash, and the consensus was it's not food. Nimnu begamru. They took a vote. They concluded she'ein nikachan kaser master. Ve'im etamet masaychol. It's not food. Which seems inconsistent with our Gemara that even this sheves, this dill herb, is considered fully food. Amar Rav Chisda. There are two uses for sheves. Ketanya hi. When we speak about sheves being regarded as food, that's the sheves which is ground into the kemach, this milky dip. So it in itself will be eaten. It's not just a seasoning or a flavoring. In that regard, it's considered fully food regarding all matters. So it depends. If it's used as just a flavor enhancer, which you sort of add to the soup, but it won't actually be eaten outright, then it's not food. But if you're going to grind and eat it per se, then it has a din of food. So it can go either way. Amar Rav Ashi, Amrit L'Shmaiti Kameder Rav Kahana. Rashi says, I presented the following thought to Rav Kahana. The question is, what's the default status of this sheves? Don't think that it has to actually be designated for kemach, hostam ol kadeira, but otherwise, if it's unspecified, we assume it's meant for the pot and it doesn't have a din of just the opposite. Elastam sheves lekemach asuya. Typically, sheves is meant for that dip. That's its primary use. Unless designated otherwise, it's none. Approved from the Mishnah that the presumed status is food. Hasheves, this dill, Mishnah asin tam. Kadeira was thrown into the soup and it released its flavor into the kadeira. So although initially it was truma, now it lost its truma status because it lost its flavor into the soup in the kadeira. And likewise, it's no longer tuma seichel. End quote. This implies that until it released its flavor, before it released its tam and tekadera, it is regarded yesh b'mishum truma u'matam tuma seichel. And the question is why? If the assumption is that it's meant for a soup, in which case it doesn't have food status unless it's explicitly redirected for that dip use. So how do you explain this Mishnah? Even before it released its flavor. Look, you see, it's in a soup. Stamla kadera, it's presumed for the kadera, which means to say it doesn't have tumas oichlin. Elo lav shmamino, that proves my point. That in fact, stamla kemech asui shmamino, that its default position is food. It's meant for that dip. And unless he redesignated it as he was growing it or as he was picking it, it retains that food status. That explains why. Even if you throw it into the soup, but it still has its flavor, it's going to be considered food regarding tumas oichlin. Until it loses its flavor, in which case it's totally useless and inedible. But until that point, it is regarded as food. Okay, so in summation, we discussed the status of sheves. The conclusion was that unlike other seasonings and herbs, which are merely meant to convey flavor, on which we have a conclusion, nim the vegamru, there's no food status to it, you can't buy it with masim sheni money, it doesn't have to mas oichlin. Sheves is a bit different because its presumed status is for the kemach, in which case it will be eaten outright, unless initially it had been designated for kedera purposes, for merely conveying a flavor. In that case, it would not have food status. Continues the mission. Oh, we had this before. Kol shechai b'resh ha'geiz, chai matonis. An animal which is subject to the mitzvah b'resh ha'geiz, such as a sheep, matonis will also apply to it. So you give the kohen the three portions, as royal chayim b'keva. But it doesn't necessarily work the other way around. Not a perfect equation, because you have v'yesh, some which are shechai matonis, like a goat, like a cow, but not b'resh ha'geiz. On to another matter. So we know that food material which grows on Shemitah the year is subject to the Shemitah laws. It must be consumed properly, it can't be destroyed, it has to be personal consumption, not commercial use. And also, beer would apply, which means that you can only retain it. Only hold on to this material as long as it's still available for the animals out in the field. But once it's no longer available for the animals out in the field, you can't hold on to this food. So shvius applies to all food matters, but beer only to those which eventually become depleted. But something which is around all year round, beer wouldn't apply to that. So once again, we have this back and forth. Kol sheyesh lo beer, yesh lo shvius. Where beer applies, certainly shvius applies. But v'yesh, you have some sheyesh le'shvius, that's subject to shvius, ve'in le'beer, no beer, because it never gets depleted. Kigoin, alei haluf shoyte v'adandana. What's an example of something which has shvius and beer? The leaf of the luf, shoyte, the leaf of the dandana, which eventually, you know, dry out and wither away and not available throughout the winter. At which point you have to release this material out to the field. But you have yesh, yesh le shviyas, yin le beer, something which is subject to shmita and not beer. That's the root of this same plant. That's an interesting irony. So in the same plant, you have two elements. A leaf becomes scarce and becomes depleted and is subject to beer, but not the root itself, which is around all year round. Ikar alof shoyte v'ikar adandan, d'chsiv. Where is the pasuk regarding beer? Uve lehem techo, v'lachaya shabar tzecho, tiyakot fosa le'echo. And we learn, as long as the animal has access to this material out in the field, you can feed it to the animals back at home. But if it's not available for the animal out there, you have to banish it, get rid of it. You can no longer continue feeding it to your animals in the barn. And these roots never get depleted. In which case, Biur is not an issue. We move on to the next Mishnah. Regarding kosher signs of animals and fish. It says the Mishnah, you should know a scientific fact is, Kol she'eshli keses, yeshli snapper. If a fish has scales, automatically it has fins. It goes together. But not the other way around. You have many non-kosher fish which have fins and no scales. So basically, if you discover scales, automatically you know he had fins and he's kosher. Over to animals. Rashi points out, only kosher varieties have horns. Rashi says, Ein karnayim elo lebehem of l'chaya tahira. And therefore, it leads us to the equation, Kol she'esh le'karnayim yesh le'tafayim. An animal is known to have horns, automatically we know it has split hooves and it's kosher. But not the other way. You could have split hooves like a chazer without horns, and it's not kosher. Explains the Gemara. Kol she'esh le'kaskeses, if it has scales, which automatically denote fins as well, then you know it's a dog tahar, kosher fish. However, v'yeish snapper, some have fins, but not scales. V'yam kaskeses, that's a dog tummy. Now comes the obvious question. If it all depends on scales is an indication, is a confirmation of fins, so why does the Torah have to enumerate both kosher signs? Just say scales, which automatically include fins. You have to look, anana kaskeses samchin, in the case, we're basing our classification on scales. If so, snapper, the fin requirement, the kasra rachmana, the Torah speaks about lovely, what's that for? Answer is, ilo kasra rachmana snapper, if the Torah not referring to fins, I wouldn't know what kaskeses means. These are foreign words to me. Havamina, I would say, my kaskeses, what is kaskeses? That's the snapper. My kaskeses is the snapper. A fin is a kosher sign. But if you don't tell me, and I would include even a non-kosher fish. Kas rachmana snapper v'kaskeses. But now, the Torah speaks about two signs, snapper kaskeses. Automatically I know one is a fin and one are scales. Vash kas rachmana snapper v'kaskeses. Now, after the fact, we have two words. But how do we know what's what? How do we know the kaskeses levushu, that a kaskeses is that cover of scales? Tichsib of a pasuk. This is by Goliath. He was wearing this coat of armor made of scales. So we see it's a coat, it's a cover. Ask the Gemara, okay, but now that we know the true meaning of kaskeses, so it's back to the question. Just say kaskeses, which has already been confirmed as scales. And once it has scales, it automatically has fins. And it's kosher. The classic answer. The Torah wanted to give us the ability to expound, to elaborate, to have broader discussions regarding these matters of Torah, Chachmas Hashem, and refer outright to all these elements, all these kosher signs, which make the kosher species, even though technically it could have just been presented in short form, and would imply, rather this way, it broadens the discussion, and gives us more opportunity to learn details of the Torah. Okay, on to the next mission. Kalaton Baruch HaLa'achra, over to the Hilchos Brachos. We know we have Bracha Rishona, prior to eating, and Bracha Achrona, following the meal. So, if something needs a pre-bracha, certainly a post-bracha. Someone who needs a post-bracha, ton bracha lefanav, requires a pre-bracha. But not the other way. Some have a pre-bracha without a post-bracha. For instance, vegetables, which aren't as significant as bread and mezonos. Only a pre-bracha, not a post-bracha. Hold it. Rabbi Yitzchak, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, the Baruch HaYorek, who would also make a post-bracha on vegetables like we do, Lasu Yimayu. So what's the Mishnah covering? What's the example of pre without post? Lasu Yimayu, it covers water. Ula Rapapa, the Baruch HaMayu, according to Rapapa, there was a bracha achron on water as well. Lasu Yimayu, so what's the Mishnah referring to? Lasu Yimitzvahs. You do a mitzvah, you make a bracha asher kichana before, not after. Hold it. Who who make a bracha upon removing their tefillin, the bracha would be Asher Kedushanu Mitzvayisav Tzvana Lishmar Chokav, to guard his directives. And Tosfos points out, it wasn't just every time they took the tefillin off, it was when nighttime arrived, perhaps Shabbos, because you're not meant to wear tefillin, so there was a mitzvah to remove the tefillin. They made a special bracha upon concluding the mitzvah. So now, the rule doesn't really hold true. Lasuye mai. So what does the Mishnah mean? Pre, without post. Lasuye reichni. Incense, besamim. Which Rashi says, mevarchan alein ba'atzei besamim. So you make a pre-bracha before enjoying the fragrance. Ve'in tfanim bracha l'achar, but not afterwards. The hana mu'etas, he said Rashi. It's a low level hana, it's not as substantial as food. So that suffices with a pre-bracha. Oh. Okay, let's recap today's daf. We started with the analysis in the Kavah Chaymer discussion between Rabbi Yechon Nuri and the Chachamim regarding whether or not a machshav is required for activation of Tumah Kala on the Nivlus Eftar. It was back and forth, and we concluded that the Chachamim are referring to the general concept, the difference between Tumah Kala in general and Tumah Chamura. Hence, they negated his Kal v'chomer. Tumah Chamura is more powerful, does not need machshava. Perhaps Tumah Kala does need machshava. Rava teaches us that a machshava b'mechubar, although it doesn't work for Tumas Eichlin, works to activate Chiv HaMasher. And we had a raya, some kashas. Ultimately, Rava tells us it's all about, when the Mishnah speaks about these formulas, it's all about concept, not necessarily relating to every specific individual circumstance. Shabbos, this seasoning, if it's meant for Kedera, it has no food status. If it's meant for Kemech, which is the presumed status, it has food status. Reish HaGez is specific to sheep. The Halacha of Bior is specific to those types which become depleted throughout the winter. An animal which exhibits horns automatically has split hooves and is kosher. Likewise, a fish with scales automatically has fins, which is kosher. Bracha lefanav na la'achrav, either Yorak, Maya, Mitzvahis, or, as the book concludes, Reichani. All the best to you, and Hatzlacha Rav.